Stephen Beavers thought we were going to have a real live lesson of sacrificing a lamb or a goat here this morning. But we'll let Kathy handle that. We're in Exodus chapter 30. We're about three-fourths of the way through the book as far as the number of chapters go, probably over that as far as time will go, but slowly getting there. We'll be there before we know it. I want to start the message this morning a little different. I want to talk about our census, not the census that they're going around taking, but our sensory perception. When I was a kid going to school, I was taught we had five senses. I don't know if they've added any sense there or not. I kind of doubt it. But we had taste, smell, touch, seeing, hearing, right? And today we're going to hone in just on one of those, and that's the sense of smell. And I'll start by asking you a question. Can your sense of smell and you're experiencing smells change you? Can it change your feelings at that moment? Can it change your emotions? Can it change your behavior? Okay? Just think along those lines. At my house, and Susan's not in here to defend herself or to make sure I don't yet contradict what I'm going to tell you. But sometimes I can go in the front door of the house and take, I mean, one step in the house. There are three things that she can do or she can cook that just overwhelm the house. And none of the three, I think, are worth overwhelming the house with, you know. One is cooking sauerkraut. Another one is cooking with garlic. I know. She went through this phase of putting spinach leaves on a cookie sheet, I think. I'm probably getting this wrong, and putting them in the oven and putting garlic and probably olive oil or something on it. And you talk about... The third one is... I don't know what the cooking term, but where you chop up onions and put them in the skillet and kind of get them brown and you put them saute, okay. Put that in with some other dish that you're making. But those three things just can overwhelm the house with smell. Now, do you think that I tell her, boy, this stinks? Not every time, but I am prone to make a comment about it, I would imagine. But what does that do to me at that time? Anything? Okay, hopefully I'm mature enough that I don't throw a big fit. It makes you hungry? Ah. I figure anything that you got to burn a candle afterwards to get rid of the smell wasn't worth cooking, you know. In the book of Genesis, chapter 8, and you don't have to turn there, but in verses 20 and 21, I've got the reference wrote there. Noah and his family have just come off the ark. They come off the ark, and Noah, the text says in verse 20 that Noah takes some animals from the clean animals and offers a sacrifice to God. Verse 21 begins with these words, "And the Lord smelled a soothing aroma." Focus in on that word, soothing. A soothing aroma. Did that do something to God? when he saw that sacrifice and smelled that soothing aroma? Did it change God's behavior? Did it change his thoughts? Okay? There are two answers to that. One is the deep theological, off-in-the-weeds answer, which is no. It didn't change God. For it to have changed God would have meant that God lacked knowledge before the sacrifice was made. So the deep answer is no, it didn't. But the other answer is yes. And in this sense, we see something different from God than we had previously seen. And that doesn't mean God changed, but the Bible is full of instances where God is described in human terms. We pointed that out over and over again over the last 20 years or so. It's called anthropomorphic language, where God takes on the characteristics of man in order that we may understand him. God has to condescend to us in our ability to understand, for us to interact with him. And that is one way that that happens. And in that sense, when we read those words, and the Lord smelled a soothing aroma, the next thing God says is, I'll never destroy the earth again with the flood. That aroma, the events that were taking place at this altar, it appears moved God in a soothing direction. Let me give you another illustration from my home. Sometime I can walk into the door, and you're going to think I'm lying when I tell you this, but this is actually happened a few times, not often. But I take a step or two in the front door, and I smell something. And there have been times when literally the next thought that comes to my mind is one of gratitude. God, thank you for this woman you have given to me. God, thank you that she is not like me, that she remembers what our kids like to eat. She remembers our grandkids' favorite food. And I'm able to sponge off of that a little bit, right? She knows what I like. You know what that smell is? It's not sauerkraut, it's not garlic, it's not onions. It's the smell of freshly baked pie crust. Okay? Not Granny Smith stuff, no. Not that dough pie thing that you buy, it's already rolled out, you know, at the store, and you just unfold it. I hope y'all don't use that stuff. Does anybody use that stuff? I see those hands.
We're afraid to.
Every head bowed. So Mike can raise his hand. Freshly baked homemade pie crust. And my, it smells good. Now, I don't know that I've ever stopped in my tracks when I first feel that aroma. Usually I'm always making a beeline to the kitchen anyway, but in that case, I really am. To see what's happening. See what she's making. Just probably at least half the time, just because she knows I like it. Now here's what I want you to feel. I know we're not even close to Exodus chapter 30. I want you to feel this first. Suppose I walk in the door, and And that aroma of that pie crust hits me. And I can't tell. Sometimes I can tell if it's an apple pie. But I can't tell if it's a chocolate pie, a sweet potato pie, a pecan pie, coconut pie, what kind of pie it is. That crust smell. And suppose that I take two or three steps and I just stop. Now, can you imagine this happening with, maybe with you? And I close my eyes. I kind of raise my head back so my nostrils can flare. And I soak it in. Why would I stop? Why would I close my eyes? To eliminate any other sensory perceptions. I don't want to think about the walls. I don't want to think about where I'm walking or stepping. All I want is one sensation, and that's of that smell. And I stand there. Remember that thought. Remember that feeling. Now let's read our text. Exodus chapter 30, verse 10 verses. You shall make an altar to burn incense on. You shall make it of acacia wood. A cubit shall be its length and a cubit its width, about 18 by 18 or 20 by 20, something about like this. It shall be square. And two cubits shall be its height, so about 36 inches tall, about like a kitchen countertop height is 36 inches. And two cubits shall be its height, its horn shall be of one piece with it. Verse 3, you shall overlay its top, its sides all around, and its horns with pure gold, and shall make for it a molding of gold all around. Two gold rings you shall make for it. Under the molding on both its sides, you shall place them on its two sides, and they shall be holders for the poles with which to bear it. You shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. You shall put it before the veil that is before the ark of the testimony, before the mercy seat that is over the testimony, where I will meet with you. And Aaron shall burn on it sweet incense every morning when he tends the lamps. He shall burn incense on it. When Aaron lights the lamps at twilight, he shall burn incense on it. A perpetual, key word, incense before the Lord throughout your generations. You shall not offer strange incense on it, or a burnt offering, or a grain offering, nor shall you pour a drink offering on it. And Aaron shall make atonement upon its horns once a year with the blood of the sin offering of atonement. Once a year he shall make atonement upon it throughout your generations. It is most holy to the Lord. So here we are back in the tabernacle describing one more piece of furniture. I think we've got one left, if I remember correctly. And this is the brazen altar of incense. Not brazen, gold altar of incense. 20 by 20 by 3 foot tall. I want you to think about where he says it's placed. If we are, let's suppose this room was our tabernacle, and across this step area would be the curtain. And behind in this area would be the Holy of Holies. That altar of incense was placed right here. Up next to the curtain, in which they were forbidden to go, beyond the curtain. So its location is close to the Holy of Holies. It is placed in such a way that when Aaron ministers and serves at this altar of incense, he is facing the Holy of Holies. This incense is between him and the Holy of Holies. That's where it's at. There's one word. He only says one time in these 10 verses, but it's a key word. It's the word sweet. What type of incense is this? Sweet. That means that it smells good. It has a good smell to it. Someone has suggested, and if this is a factor, it's a minor factor. The Someone has suggested that one of the reasons for this altar of incense was to be like a Yankee candle, to eliminate the smell of all this blood that John talked about last week. I remember him using the phrase, there's blood everywhere by the time they get through. And I don't know how many of you have skinned out a deer or some other kind of animal, but it can get pretty rank in a hurry. Perhaps that's it, but I think that's a minor thing, if that was even a consideration. But it's a sweet type of incense, a sweet flavor, a sweet smell. So there's what we have. The table is there. It's made of gold, overlaid with gold, and it is there against the Holy of Holies, against the curtain, which they are not to go past. There is a perpetual incense burning on this day and night. They refurbish it in the morning and in the evening. And once, there's no offerings placed on this, burnt offerings of any kind, except for once a year. Some of the blood that is from the other altar is sprinkled upon the horns on the corners. So there's what we have. There's the facts. There's the picture. I want you to talk a little bit about biblical examples of the use of incense in worship. You can go back and look up the word incense in an exhaustive concordance, and you'll find that this word in the Bible is used around 120 times, maybe 110, maybe 130, I don't know, just around 120 or so times. The way that it's used is this. In the Pentateuch, from Genesis through Deuteronomy, almost all of its usages are just like what we talked about right here. It's describing or instructing or giving examples of the children of Israel and their construction of this altar and of their how they're to use it. Okay, most of those things are instructions here in Exodus, in Leviticus, Deuteronomy. That's where they're found. Most of them, if not all of them, I would say all of them, but maybe I missed one. But by the vast majority of them are given to us in the context of worship. Okay? So you've got this incense burning, being burned, a sweet incense, in the context, in the midst of worship. All right, from Deuteronomy on, through 1 Samuel, 1 Kings, 1 Chronicles, Ezekiel, Isaiah, on through, most of those examples that you'll see this, if not all of them, are examples of either not so much instructions being given, but examples of the Israelites either in their worship with the altar of incense, or as often as not, other nations worshiping a false god, and incorporated in their worship of their false god was the use of incense as well. There's a connection also between this word incense and the two words, sweet, savor. If you were to look those two words up in an exhaustive concordance, you will find probably as many references to those two words as you would incense. And they are used in very much the same way. Last week in John's text, I think there was two or three times where the word sweet was used in the text that he used last Sunday. We see it once in ours. And you'll see it dozens and dozens of times when in the Old Testament when describing the worship of either the Israelites or other nations. A sweet savor, a savor being the aroma, and almost always that aroma is described as being sweet. Now, why would that be? It's pretty simple, really, if you just think about it. These worshipers are wanting to have a favorable response to their deity. So they offer, their offering of incense is one that is, in their minds, would bring a favorable response. In other words, it smells good. It's a sweet smell. And those two words are almost always together, sweet, savor. Now, let's get to the New Testament, just to see a little bit about this. Look in Luke chapter 1, verses 9 to 11. If you would, if you want to turn there, I'm going to read those verses. Luke chapter 1, this is where John the Baptist, before he was born, his father and mother received word that they were going to have a child. John the Baptist's dad, his name was Zacharias. Y'all catch that I know his dad's name. His mother's name was Elizabeth. Got that down. Chapter 1, verse 9. Or let me read verse 8. So it was that while he, this is Zacharias, John the Baptist's father. John the Baptist is not born yet. While he was serving as priest before God in the order of his division, according to the custom of the priesthood, his lot fell to burn incense when he went into the temple of the Lord. So what does Zacharias do? He burns incense. That's his job, to burn incense at this altar of incense that's there in the temple in this case. Verse 10, and the whole multitude of the people was praying outside at the hour of incense. So not only do we see that at the hour of incense, which he is to refurbish the incense in the morning or the afternoon, not only is he doing it, but the people are aware when this takes place. And a number of them may come each day to the temple at that hour to do what? To pray and to worship God. At the same time, they're consciously, intentionally, purposely doing this at the same time that the incense is being changed. And then we see an angel appears to him. Notice it says an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing on the right side of the altar of incense. So Zacharias, I assume, was facing the altar and the curtain. And this angel stands, he appears right here. Okay, so here's a real life example of this taking place 2,000 years or so, or 1,500 years or so after the thing was first built. In Revelation chapter 1, or excuse me, chapter 8, verse 1, I'm going to read this one. This is the Apostle John, part of his revelation that was given to him. There's seven seals. Six of the seals have been opened. Chapter 8, verse 1 says, when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. Okay, now we see John saw a throne. John saw an altar of incense. And John sees this angel offering this incense in conjunction with prayers. So you see that connection made between prayers and the use of incense. Now, having said all that, I want us to look at just a little deeper symbolism with this incense. In Psalm 141, verses 1 and 2, this is a psalm of David, I believe. I want to read you what it says, if I can get there. This is a psalm where David is crying out to God for deliverance. Crying out to God for deliverance from his enemies. Perhaps this is the enemy of Saul. I recall if it says in the psalm. But in verse 1, here's what David says. Lord, I cry out to you. Make haste to me. Give ear to my voice when I cry out to you. David says, God, hear me. Hurry and come to me and hear me. Let my prayer be set before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. So David makes reference to this event that takes place every day in the temple or the tabernacle, whichever one the case may be, where in the morning they refurbish the incense and in the evening they refurbish the incense. In this case, he references to the evening one. I don't know if there's a distinction for that, but he says, let my prayer be set before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands, which is symbolic of worship or a part of worship, as the evening sacrifice. Now, what does David say? Let my prayer. Here is David's request. Let my prayer be something. What does he say it to be? Let my prayer be just like it is when the incense is offered at the evening sacrifice. How do the Israelite priest and people expect the evening sacrifice and the morning sacrifice to affect God? Pleased. They want God to be pleased with their worship. They want God to be pleased with their sacrifice. And this is what David is saying. God, let my offering to you, let my cry out to you have that same effect upon you. Let it please you to come to me. Let it please you to respond to me. Let it please you to be pleased with my offering. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, read this one. You'll see how the symbolism comes to life a little bit. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 14 to 16. Now thanks be to God, who always leads us in triumph in Christ, and through us diffuses or spreads out the fragrance, here's the smell, the sweet savor, of his knowledge in every place. Let's read that verse again. Now thanks be to God, who always leads us in triumph in Christ, and through us, you get that? Through us spreads out this sweet savor of his knowledge in every place. Who is the, or what is the, I don't know if it's median is the right word or not, but the vehicle by which this fragrance is spread? Us. Through us, he spreads out this sweet savor, this fragrance of him, of his, the knowledge of him, the knowledge of Christ in every place. Verse 15, for we are to God the fragrance of Christ. Fragrance of Christ. He explains it a little better, doesn't it? For we are to God the fragrance of Christ, whereat? Among those who are being saved and among those who are perished. We are the sweet-smelling savor of the knowledge and the presence of God in every place, and this savor touches both the saved and the unsaved. Verse 16, to the one, we are the aroma of death leading to death. That would be the unbeliever, wouldn't it? The unbelievers, I don't know if he's saying we smell like death, or if he's saying this sweet-smelling savor that we are spreading apart is one of the things that condemns them. Okay, we see language like that in the book of Romans, I think chapter 2, where the goodness of God that is rejected condemns men. And to those, he said, the aroma of life, to the other, the aroma of life leading to life. So what Paul is saying is this, it seems to be, that you and I, as Christians, we are a sweet-smelling savor of the knowledge of Jesus Christ, and we are spreading it out over the world in which we live. Look on over a few pages to the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children. We know what an imitator is, someone who copies someone else, someone who mocks in the right word, in the right sense of that word, someone else, someone who does the same thing that someone else does. They imitate them, copycat, right? It says, be imitators of God as dear children. Verse 2, and walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. So Paul says to the Ephesians, here's what Christ did. Christ offered himself to God, a sacrifice, and that sacrifice was a sweet-smelling aroma. Was God pleased with that sacrifice? Yes. If I may condescend God so that we may understand him, Christ offered himself. God said, God was pleased. God was satisfied. God was pleased with the offering of Christ. And Paul says, you are to imitate Christ. You are to live your life in love. You're to walk in love, imitating Christ, so that your life is a sweet, is smelling offering to me that is seen in the world. Now, I just want to ask you a couple questions and then we're going to close. If God were to watch you every Sunday morning, 10:30 to 12 in this room. If God were to watch you, would he conclude that you had worshiped him? If God watched you this morning from 10:30 to 12, would he say yes? That's my child worshiping me. You can think back to this morning. I can't remember what I did last Sunday morning. But this Sunday morning, close enough, I know where my mind was. I know where my heart was. And you do too. Did God see you worshiping this morning? If you were to watch. He does watch, doesn't he? You can't help but watch. He sees all. What did he see? If God were to read your mind every Sunday morning, and this morning God read your mind, would he conclude that your thoughts were focused upon him and worshiping him today? What in the world was that? We got a spook back there. What would he conclude? I got news for you. God can read your mind. I guarantee you, I act like sometimes he doesn't. But he can. He does. There's nothing new to him. So I'm going to leave you with this. In your daily life, in your daily walk through this world, I'm not talking about necessarily your walk with Christ. Those are, you know, Christian terms that we use. But in your daily life, as you go about your day, it is an offering. It is your offering to the world from God. Are they impressed with your God? Is your offering and your walk a sweet-smelling savor for God? We're going to close in a little bit with another song, but I want to close with just a time of prayer again. And let's just offer to God, would you? Offer to God worship. Just prayers. Vicki. You can. The sensory perception of smelling sauerkraut, garlic, and onions. I can give you a few other things put in that blank. You need more. The last one, the sensory perception of smelling pie. P-I-E.